Welcome back to Small Town Missing. I'm Thomas.
I'm Will.
And I'm Rhonda.
And thank you guys so much for listening. We've been having a lot of fun with this. Continue to leave likes and comments. Let us hear from you. If you got cases, go ahead and comment them and we'll try them.
Yeah, this sounds so familiar. It sounds like we've done this before. A few times.
Yeah.
Really?
Every time, because like, we've said in the past that sometimes we'll do episodes in a row. And I'm like, I said, wow, this sounds so familiar. It's like we just did this.
Yeah, like 3 minutes ago.
Yeah, 3 minutes ago. Yeah, if y'all didn't hear that episode, though, last week, go listen to it was Regina.
What? Regina Brown.
Regina Brown. That was such a good episode.
I was going to make fun of him, but I just feel like being nice.
I was going to say Regina King, by the way.
I know.
I was going to say Regina King. But I was like, Rhonda, that was such a good episode.
Or Regina Hall.
I think the things that we've been going over lately, too, have been really interesting, especially because like of that one thing you were saying about literally a similar case happening around the time Regina went missing. It was like involving another pilot and another like stewardess, basically.
Flight attendants.
Yes. I forget. Is that interchangeable? I forget if they're interchangeable.
I don't think so. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah, that was weird. And for that murder to occur just months before Regina's disappearance and in the same town.
Yeah.
And like you say, they were both wives were flight attendants and both husbands were pilots.
It makes me wonder too. I don't know how small the field. I'm sure that there's no lack of pilots in New York City, in like the New York City area, but it is weird. Like I have to wonder if they knew each other somehow, like in passing, or maybe, you know, I don't know. That's another speculation. I'm sorry, whoever is getting mad at the speculation, but that's something I think about.
Yeah. No idea. Mm-hmm. That's very possible, I guess.
But it was a great episode. That's what I wanted to say. So I'm sorry. You continue.
All right. Are you guys ready for me to get started on this one?
Yep.
I'm ready.
Okay. Today, the team will be discussing the disappearance of Michelle Whitaker.
This one's a good one.
Michelle's case seems like the typical run-of-the-mill cold case at first, but there are many twists and turns.
Oh, don't you love a good twist and turn?
Michelle Whitaker was born August 16th, 1969. Her family was close-knit, and she was one of five children. She was described as warm and kind-hearted by her family during her adolescence. The family eventually uprooted and moved to Gastonia, North Carolina, when Michelle was 15. Apparently, she was not a big fan of the move. Now, where did they live prior to moving to Gastonia? Do you know?
You know, honestly, let me see. Thomas, pause.
Sorry, I'm wondering.
Why do we have to pause? Just
because
look.
I want to know. Because honestly, I don't remember that being in there.
Well, yeah, you can talk. You don't have to pause it.
Ah, listen, we sound so unprofessional now.
Oh, no, we don't.
Let's see. Well,
it sounds like we're picking on Will.
Rhonda, you go ahead and continue, and then I will find out where she lives.
Well, are we paused?
No, we are not paused.
We're not?
I didn't pause it. Go pause it for that.
Whatever.
I'll pause it whenever there's a mistake we need to fix, but I'm not going to pause it because Will wants to Google.
Okay, all right. Well, let me go on then.
Does that not sound fair?
Let me go on then. Okay, in typical rebel-like fashion, Michelle began fighting with her mother during her teen years. Despite these clashes with her mother, Michelle planned on joining the Navy after she graduated high school. Wait a minute. Despite these clashes? It sounds like because of these clashes.
Yeah, I'd want to get away too if I was fighting with my mother. I mean, I know a lot of girls right now that are deciding what they want to do with their life, and some of them are like, I'm joining the military. I want to get the hell away from her.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know how you go through that time. It's kind of like, you know, we during your adolescence, like, you know how we were at 18? Like, we know everything. Like, we're going to conquer the world.
I never thought I knew everything.
I feel like I did.
I'm 28 and I don't know jack.
Well, I mean, I feel like at that time, like, you think, because, I mean, there are still times where I'm stubborn, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Stubbornness, yeah, I get.
All right. Well, Michelle ended up marrying a Navy recruiter shortly after graduation, but the marriage lasted less than a year.
Yeah.
After Michelle divorced her now ex-husband, the family, including Michelle, moved to Spartanburg, South Carolina, where Michelle worked part-time as a waitress and was struggling to get by.
Yeah, I mean, like, as you do, you know, especially like, I mean, I feel like now we're struggling to get by still in our 20s, you know, you just don't make enough money then and you don't have enough life experience. You know, everyone wants a experience, you just don't have experience at 18.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
One night, Michelle was badly beaten and sexually assaulted by a man named David, whom she had met working her shift. She was left badly bruised and beaten from the altercation, and David himself pled guilty to assault and battery and received 8 years in prison.
Only 8 years, too?
Well, it's probably because he got a plea deal for admitting he did
actually admitting he did it. Which, 8 years for that, like, I mean, like, no, listen, I think there's a special place in hell for people like that. And I'll be the first person to say it.
I agree with you.
Agreed
on that.
100%.
Yep.
Michelle's difficulty in life continued to mount, and she would bounce between sleeping at her parents' and friends' houses, and she would even sleep in her car in some cases.
Yeah, and I, as you know, too, I mean, like, I think what, and it'll kind of be determined, like, she was determined to be kind of like living a transient lifestyle, kind of like bouncing from couch to couch, you
That's
know?
Exactly what it sounds like.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shortly before her disappearance, Michelle was even arrested and served jail time for DUI. Apparently, according to her family and friends, Michelle was suffering from a substance abuse disorder for much of her adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
On August 5th, 2002, Michelle got into an argument with her mother, Laura, and left her family home. Laura wasn't sure where Michelle went after the argument, but days later, Laura received a call from a man Michelle had been staying with. He told Laura he hadn't seen Michelle in days.
Yeah.
And due to this phone call, Laura called the police, but she was told the police couldn't do much about Michelle because Michelle was an adult.
Isn't that terrible, too? It's like, you know, it's like you're already worried enough. I mean, you know their routine, and I get it that she's living. She's not typically just living with Laura at the time. But also, like, it's out of character probably for her not to have contact with them for that long. I mean, you got to take those, like, little things about, like, what families know about their loved one and, like, run with it to me. Like, if Thomas was gone, like, after 2 days and I didn't hear from him or something, I'd be like, well, that's weird. That's not like him, you know, or something.
Yeah, I usually respond to calls and texts within like 2 minutes.
I know, like he's very good with that. So I mean, if I had a series of string of calls, or I couldn't maintain contact with you or something, it would be odd. So I would hope the police would want to, you know, investigate a little bit.
Yeah, I would too. But police officer Sergeant Alan Woods, who lived in Laura's neighborhood at the time, told her that Michelle would turn up soon. Especially because Michelle lived a transient lifestyle.
Yeah, which I hate that. You hear it all the time.
I agree. August 21st, 2002, an official missing persons report was filed. No one in Michelle's life had seen her at that time or spoken to her for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
During the initial phases of the investigation, police accessed Michelle's bank records, but there was no activity from what they could tell. Michelle's ex-husband was ruled out immediately. And police even spoke to other members of Michelle's family, co-workers, and other figures in her life.
Yeah. I mean, just trying to, you know, get in, maybe establish what the timeline was or where she was last seen. Like, did she hang out with anybody? Yeah. I mean, that's like routine stuff. And I mean, it doesn't sound like they were really getting much.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Police begin to shift their focus to a man named Doug Gilmore. Gilmore was apparently the last person to see Michelle August 16th, 2002. They had met at a local pool hall, hung out for a few hours, and left to drive around on his motorcycle. The next morning, Gilmore allegedly dropped Michelle off at a truck stop, and during his interview, Gilmore also alleged that Michelle had expressed interest to him about going to Myrtle Beach.
I mean, listen, who doesn't want to go to Myrtle Beach?
Yeah. The police actually administered a polygraph to Gilmore, which he passed.
Well, see, I'm like, we don't hear that much, you guys. We always hear about the failed polygraphs.
Yeah, we do. The family started to pass out handmade flyers of Michelle at the truck stop where she disappeared, but the case went cold about a year after her disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
A break in the case occurred August 2005 when police received an anonymous letter. The letter supposedly gave details about where Michelle's body was located. The letter even included a map. According to the letter, Michelle's body was near the water's edge, near tall pines, and at the edge of a pond nearly 25 miles from the truck stop.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was found when searching this location, and DNA extracted from the letter proved that it had been written by a woman, and it was thought to be a hoax.
Yeah, which I don't know why the hoax thing from a woman. They're like, oh, a woman couldn't do this. I'm like, yeah, they could. I'm like, yeah, they for sure could.
But why would somebody take the trouble to do that?
I don't know. I think it's probably people trying to get a little, like, what is it called? Like notoriety or something like that. Or, you know, try to do something just to, because they're mean. People are just mean.
That's, yeah, to take time to do something like that, to hurt a family, you know.
Who is already hurting? Like, you know, obviously the family is going through it. I mean, like, they're, you know, passing out flyers. The police, you know, at that time probably wasn't really taking them very seriously. I mean, they're trying to get support from somewhere. So, you know, I feel bad for them.
Yeah, exactly. All right. On October 2005, a man named Jonathan Vick was arrested for the sexual assault and murder of a woman named Dana Satterfield, a beauty salon owner. Dana had been murdered in her own salon by Vick, and the salon itself was only 12 miles away from the truck stop Michelle had disappeared from.
Mm-hmm.
It was rumored that Vic himself was a patron of the diner Michelle had worked for, and it was speculated the two cases may be connected.
Yeah, which, I mean, I guess I could see, but also, too, I mean, like, I feel like if I went to the local McDonald's or something like that, I guess I'm a patron of McDonald's, but a lot of other people are, too. So, I mean, that is, like, I think that's, like, grasping at straws a little bit, too.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. It depends. I mean, did she and Dana have anything in common? Did they look the same? Did they frequent some of the same areas?
From what I remember, I don't believe they looked exactly the same. Like, I think Michelle was like a brunette and Dana was like a blonde woman. And so I mean, not exactly the same MO, but there is a little section coming up where it might be a little bit more of a similarity.
So here, I just need to stay tuned. Okay. I do the same thing to you. All right. Besides Dana's case, Vic had been suspected in the disappearance of an ex-girlfriend named Heather Sellers. Heather had been a waitress at the Waffle House before her disappearance. So maybe Vic had a particular MO.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. And also, too, I think Michelle worked at a Waffle House as well. So I think that maybe it's like, okay, they're waitresses at Waffle House or something, you know? So it's like maybe there's a connection there somehow. Because, listen, I know everybody and their mama in the South has been to a Waffle House. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Despite the speculation into Vic, he ended up never being tried for either Michelle or Heather's cases, but he was sentenced to life plus 60 years for Dana's murder, November of 2006.
Life
plus 60 years.
Exactly. They want to make sure he's good and dead.
Yeah. So here comes the craziest part of the case. 5 years after Michelle's disappearance, Michelle's family held a vigil for her, and Laura even made a webpage with pictures of Michelle throughout her life. All of these tributes to Michelle helped get the word out about her case, and many true crime shows like Forensic Files even had episodes following the case.
Yeah.
August. I'm sorry. Well, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to say, I think that, you know, besides Forensic Files, I think some of the information, there's like another show, or it's either a show or a podcast called Gone. And it's like all these things were kind of picking up her case and everything. She was getting a little bit of steam here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
August 2008, a woman called Lieutenant William Gary and told him that Michelle was alive and living in Oregon.
Look!
Yeah, at the time of the call. Wanting to prove that her story was true, the woman even sent a picture of the neighbor suspected to be Michelle. Lieutenant Gary showed the picture to Sergeant Woods, whom we'd talked about earlier.
Yeah, he was the neighbor of Laura and stuff like that, that said, oh, she'll turn up.
Yeah, she'll turn up eventually. She lives a transient lifestyle.
I hate
yeah,
that freaking
exactly.
saying. If I ever hear that one more time, I'm going to scream.
Okay, so after placing a call to the Oregon police, an officer was sent to the home of the neighbor, and the neighbor confirmed that everyone was thinking, she was Michelle Whitaker.
Isn't that crazy?
I don't think we've ever had a found. We've always been missing and never found.
Only finds we get are like really, really bad kind.
Thomas, yeah. Hey, listen, he said the last time, he's like, if Will does it, it's always terrible or
yeah,
something
okay.
like that.
You're right. I was wrong.
Eat
you finally found
oh,
a
so you had to do this one.
Found.
I got you.
I know.
Gotcha.
He had to. What's the saying? Open mouth, insert foot.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So he just had to prove a point.
I did.
She had been alive the entire time and living a brand new life.
Listen, as we've said in these other episodes, like, what if these people are doing it? What if they're actually going out and, like, trying to lead new lives and everything? What if that's the solution that we're looking for?
Well, and April Pitzer. Yep. That was one of the things we speculated about.
April Pitzer. And Dr. Cheryl that we talked about.
Pearson.
Pearson. Many episodes ago. Like, what if she went to go live a different life? Or, like, what if any of these people went to go do that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so why did Michelle decide to drop out of her old life and invent a new one?
Yeah.
Well, according to Michelle, who had been interviewed on an episode of Gone, she had been tired of her lifestyle at the time and preceding her disappearance. And after the argument with her mother, she drifted around and contemplated going to Myrtle Beach, which somebody mentioned.
Listen,
that it was
go
interviewed.
To Myrtle Beach. Let's all go to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, that's right. That was the story Gilmore had told the people, the police years ago. And after he dropped her off at the truck stop, she caught a ride and ended up in places like Vegas and California and eventually settled in Oregon.
Yeah, which is now they're sending all these pictures of, like, she's my neighbor, yeah. You know?
Now, Michelle alleges that she had no idea of the scope of the investigations taken in her case, and she had originally thought her family would be better off without her. But now that everyone knows where Michelle is, she's much closer to her family and including, and at least according to her words.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, hey, like, we actually kind of have a good ending. I think the kind of the source that I listed, I think it's crime. It's called It's Crime O'Clock Somewhere.
Yeah.
I think that's great. So they did a very good, like, summation of this case, which I accessed along with a couple of other things. But I think they kind of questioned Michelle a little bit in it. They're like, you know, they're like, I find it weird that she wouldn't have known of the scope of her investigation, like, into her disappearance and stuff like that. And just kind of like, I don't know, it was kind of just questioning those aspects of it. But I mean, I guess according to Michelle and the family, I mean, everything's a little bit better than it was. But I don't know. I don't know if I could find it in my heart to forgive Thomas or somebody like that if he just left and all of a sudden, like, years later.
And just never even thought to say, hey, I'm alive, guys.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I kind of feel bad for the family in a way, but I'm glad.
But she said that she basically didn't have that great a relationship with them.
Well, yeah. I mean,
if she left in a bad place, having a bad relationship with them, if she doesn't hear from them, she's gone for like a year or two. By the time it catches traction, she's not listening for her name anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
which I don't even think, honestly, like, I don't know what the name was, honestly, that she was caught under. It might have been the same one for all I know.
Yeah. I don't know. That would be interesting to find out. Did she change her name?
Yeah. But I don't, I think the interesting thing of the case is that, you know, it provides a little bit of hope in there somewhere, like, maybe instead of something nefarious happened, like that Gilmore Gilmore, that was his name, right? Like, yeah, the guy who, like, yeah, dropped her off. He was, what an upstanding guy. He was like, man, this is what I did, and I dropped her off at this station. She had talked about going to Myrtle Beach, and he was actually completely 100% right and did
everything. He
was innocent. And, you know, he could have been, if something would have happened.
And in most cases, you sit there going, he's sketchy as hell. He's so guilty.
That's so bad, too.
Yeah. What if they'd put him in jail for her disappearance? You know, this is suspicious. We think he killed her.
Yeah.
Even though we don't have a body, we're going to put him in jail.
And which makes me wonder, like, would they have done a no-body case, you think? Because, I mean, I guess there wasn't anything nefarious at the time. They didn't have any physical evidence just indicating. But, you know, and then that other guy, too. I mean, granted, he did kill somebody, but he could have, you know, potentially been linked to that. Because, weirdly enough, I guess they both work at Waffle House. I'm not sure if they knew each other. The Heather Sellers, I think the one, you know, or mm-hmm. one of those. So it's one of those weird coincidences that, you know, I mean, it always says, like, the world is not as it's not as big as we seem. It's smaller than we think, you know. It's like, what are the odds of that happening?
Yeah. And back to Doug Gilmore, I don't know that you know it would be a big stretch to put him in jail for something like that, because you don't have any kind of evidence that anything happened.
Exactly.
But I was just throwing that out there. What if they had put him in jail for some reason because they suspected that she had been killed?
Yeah, I mean, there's been nobody cases that people have pursued before. So, you know, I mean, yeah. I think weirder things could happen.
Yeah, and we're speculating again.
Oh,
so,
God. We're doing what we shouldn't.
Speculating.
I'm speculating. That person who left that review is so triggered.
We're going to now refer to Will just as Speculation.
I am a speculator. We will
no longer be using our real names. Will is Speculation.
I am Speculation.
Announce the other two names at a later episode.
Y'all's names will have to come up. But right. No, I think that's so cool.
Yeah, that I'm glad she's found, you know, for her family's sake and for her sake, obviously. Yep.
It sounds like she's in a better spot, too.
Yeah. Well, she grew up.
That's
probably part of it.
She grew up, and then there was a picture that I remember seeing. If you look up Michelle Whitaker, you'll see the picture that they're talking about. It was the neighbor whose face is blurred out, and then it's Michelle. And literally, they're, like, laughing. Like, it's a picture of them, like, laughing and, like, having a good time or something like that. And she's like, oh, yeah, like, this is the picture I have. Like, here you go, police officers. So, I mean, I don't know. It kind of gave me a feel-good moment there in a world of terrible true crime stories.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to share something that I found.
Okay.
We had someone ask, where does the U.S. rank when it comes to number of missing persons?
Okay.
And I don't know if this is an actual apples-to-apples comparison, but this is something I found on the United Nations Office of Drugs, from the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime from 2018.
Okay, so it's new.
And, yeah, fairly it's new, yeah. About four years old. And Turkey ranks number one with 42.669 kidnappings or abductions per 100,000 people.
Mm.
And there's 10 countries listed, and we are not in the top 10 at all.
Really?
And looking through here, I believe number four was Belgium at 10.285.
Yo, that's a lot, though, too. Per 100,000, they're saying?
Yes.
That's a lot of kidnappings, though, still, you know?
And number 10 was England and Wales at 8.835.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is 4 years old, 2018. I know you're saying it's fairly recent, but when it comes to missing persons, maybe not quite as recent.
As soon as something comes out, 2 weeks, it's like, all right, it's outdated. You know, do it all again.
Yeah, well, as Pretty much. I'm not sure this is an apples and apples comparison of missing persons. And I'll give you an example. They listed three forms of kidnapping. Number one, kidnapping of a child by a parent is the most common in many developed countries.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, we're very familiar with that. You know, a lot of our Amber Alerts are a non-custodial parent has taken the child.
Yeah, who's like taking it because like they're not allowed visitation or something
right,
like that.
Exactly. Abduction for human trafficking is number two in the list. Mm-hmm. And then number three, kidnapping for political or economic reasons in less developed countries.
Yeah.
So that may be a inflated number in some of these countries. I'm like, hey, give me $5 and I'll kidnap you again tomorrow.
Yeah, or something. You know? Well, and like what you were talking about too for like the, you know, sex trafficking. It's like, how many stories have we talked about dealing with like missing young women who are like all the time, like the suspected reasoning behind the kidnapping is, oh, they were sex trafficked or something like that.
Exactly.
You know, that was Brittany Drexel. They used to think that she was sex trafficked. And Lauren Spearer, that was something that someone said, I remember under in a, you know, podcast about it one time. And we've covered those cases if y'all want to hear them. But it's interesting to think that, you know, you don't think it would affect your day to day, but it affects a lot more people typically than we might think.
Yeah, I agree. Well, our show notes or our notes will be on our episode, our show. And thanks everyone for listening. If you like the podcast, please tell others about us and share. And you can reach us on Instagram, Small Town Missing. And we'll have another episode next week.
Thank you, Rhonda.
All right. Catch you guys next time.